For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson. With the latest readout video from our free Wednesday Wake Up email newsletter, to which you should subscribe, as you should also please subscribe to our YouTube or Rumble channel if you're a regular viewer but haven't yet signed up. And this week we return to the extraordinary verdict in the Mann v. Stein case and its possible ironic Streisand effect of drawing attention to Mann's nastiness and political rhetoric in ways that harm the reputation that he sued to protect. Not to mention the reputation of the scientific establishment if it rushes to excuse his conduct as all being in a good cause. And yes, there's already an example of it. A piece in Science magazine praising Mann and his work is unable to avoid conceding that Mann, quote, has expressed strong and even intemperate emotions and words in political discourse, end quote. But then it attempts to justify it, saying, quote, it's perfectly human to react when attacked, end quote. Sure, as if Mann's many tirades on social media were merely the responses of one being unfairly attacked, instead of the rants of one accustomed to doing the attacking. But the more his defenders try to talk around the central point, the more they accidentally draw attention to it and to their own unease with it. Inside Climate News also played the victim card on behalf of Mann and others in the catbird seat academically, saying, quote, a DC jury hands a win to the climate scientists behind the hockey stick graph, but less prominent researchers continue to feel threats over their work, end quote. Yeah, they do. Namely, the ones who dare question the consensus and then find that they can't get grants, jobs, or promotions, and if they do somehow get a job, find themselves hounded out of academia by various self-appointed gatekeepers known to contact journal editors and so forth. The science item by H. Holden Thorpe, who turns out to be their editor-in-chief, says that Mann, quote, also sees assaults on science as advancing the conservatives' agenda. They want to make doing science in these areas so toxic that young people won't want to go into it, he said, end quote. But it's Mann who wants to make criticism of science, also known as Michael Mann and climate orthodoxy, so toxic that young people won't dare do it, and scientific debate will be replaced by politically endorsed, state-enforced unanimity. And despite his best efforts, Thorpe can't entirely overlook this chilling effect, or Mann's manners. Quote, another lesson is that, although some may prefer scientists to be more restrained and circumspect than Mann, expressing passionate views does not justify false accusations from critics, end quote. What, like the one where Mann falsely accused Judith Curry of sleeping her way to the top? No, that stuff is fine. Quote, what's important is that scientists are dispassionate in their research publications, not on social media or in opinion pages, end quote. Thorpe's attempt to excuse Mann's behavior is a mess, not least because he tries to defend it without explicitly mentioning any of it, which suggests that he realizes just how ugly it is. Hey, you 40%ers. I know you're out there. You're the 40% who are watching but haven't yet subscribed to the channel. And I want to ask you, please, to click this button and get us from 84,000 to 100,000 subscribers in the next 2 months. It doesn't cost you anything. It helps us grow the Climate Discussion Nexus, and it helps protect us against getting deplatformed. So just click here, and we'll get back to the show. Elsewhere in the newsletter, we note that farmers fed up with climate policies that threaten to destroy their livelihoods have dealt a major setback to ambitious green schemes by politicians whose entire careers involve strikingly little involvement with actual wealth generation. But now, Reuters' Sustainable Switch assures us that these yokels don't know what's good for them. They emailed, quote, there's been plenty of green love lost this Valentine's Day as farmers protest against climate rules across the European Union nations, end quote, but then add, quote, at the same time, agriculture is one of the sectors worst affected by climate change, end quote. What a bunch of hicks. But let us say it again. Change that sentence by adding policy at the end, and it becomes correct. Farmers are threatened by climate policies, not by climate change itself, which is not a threat, has not stopped worldwide increases in food production over the past 50 years, and wouldn't be stopped by the policies in question, even if it were a problem. It is far from clear how firmly most journalists grasp these realities, or indeed any connected with modern agriculture and the relative menace of climate change, as opposed to deliberately expensive fuel, restrictions on fertilizer, and so forth. But the farmers seem pretty certain. In the newsletter, we also take aim at a New York Times climate forward piece, quote, tipping points for the planet, end quote, that regurgitates the usual stuff about, quote, profound upheavals as a result of human activity, end quote, and, quote, glaciers around the world melting faster than expected, end quote, along with Amazon deforestation, collapsing ocean currents, and so forth and such like, and then says, quote, all of these developments appear worrisome on the surface, but most concerning of all, they raise the specter that the planet may be approaching some of the so-called tipping points that could trigger severe and irreversible changes, end quote. Like what, we sneer? Melting glaciers? Amazon deforestation? Collapsing ocean currents? But no, to infinity and beyond. Except that maybe approaching, unless not, is more soporific than alarming. Also, we're repeatedly told that the worst things imaginable for plants would be more plant food and more warmth. So it's a bit odd to read that, quote, BC cherry growers reeling after January cold snap that damaged buds, end quote. It's just a snap, of course, not a wave or a dome. Those are only with heat. But anyway, the story assures us that it's a byproduct of warming, just like everything bad. And in that topsy-turvy world, barren frozen wastes are good and plants are bad. Hence, quote, global warming is turning Greenland green, end quote. Boo, not green. See, quote, parts of Greenland's ice sheet and glaciers that melted over the past 3 decades have been replaced by wetlands, shrub vegetation, and areas of barren rock, end quote. Shrub vegetation, good, right? No, terrible, quote, the findings raise concerns about how Greenland's retreating ice could threaten the stability of the landscape, exacerbate rising sea levels, and contribute further greenhouse gas emissions in areas that have turned into methane-producing wetlands, end quote. Boo, wetlands. And, of course, that's what's supposed to be happening. Whereas, if only the glaciers would come back and turn Tennessee into tundra, we'd all get rich. Oh, and Euronews.Green whines, quote, Amazon tipping point, up to 47% forest threatened by climate change and deforestation, study warns, end quote. Threatened by? What does that phrase even mean? That it might get drier if it gets drier? Oh well, quote, climate tipping points like Amazon loss are hard to comprehend in their complexity and enormity, but the call to action from the study's authors is familiar and clear, end quote. Well, yes, it would be. The political science is settled. Meanwhile, as Canada's policy of taxing so-called carbon pollution, then giving us the money back inefficiently so we can go on buying gas, becomes increasingly unpopular, the genius is busy reinventing our economy with whole new industries and technologies that nobody else knew worked, do have a solution. Rename the Climate Action Incentive Payment the Canada Carbon Rebate. Oh, and when the German Chancellor came to Canada to beg for natural gas, our Prime Minister promptly declared huffily that there was no business case for selling a valuable product to a man waving hard cash in our faces. But now we read that, quote, fracked U.S. gas will flow through Mexico, end quote, because, quote, the fracking boom has transformed the United States into the world's largest natural gas producer and exporter, causing enormous shifts in energy markets, end quote. Alas, the people producing this gas and selling it and buying it apparently lack our Prime Minister's business acumen from a lifetime of, hey, wait a minute. Ah, and speaking of acumen, Canada's Minister of Climate Communism, Stephen Guilbeault, really made a mess of things, even by his standards, by declaring out of the blue at a Montreal gathering of public transit enthusiasts that, quote, our government has made the decision to stop investing in road infrastructure, end quote. It wasn't even true. He first denied saying it, then when caught, frantically backpedaled, as some unnamed, quote, senior government official told CBC News there are no changes to federal policy, end quote. But these guys live in a fantasy land where, with the wave of a hand, they can transform anything into something new and better. Except their credibility, because in a baffling, unrelated development, a confidential Privy Council report, quote, complains Canadians have little trust in Cabinet's climate leadership, end quote. What a shock that is. Though, in that vein, the politicians who are promising us an energy transition is accelerating and urging us to let them throw our billions into supposedly exciting new industries might want to pause a moment and explain how things are progressing in another related big transition that they hyped, namely to plant-based meat. A guest essay in the New York Times was quite frank about the matter, including its seductive appeal. Joe Fassler wrote, quote, between 2016 and 2022, investors poured almost $3 billion into cultivated meat and seafood companies, end quote. only to discover that consumers didn't want the stuff. But he points out, and this is important, quote, "It is a gleaming vision of a world just beyond the present, a world in which meat is abundant and affordable with almost no cost to the environment. Animal slaughter is forgotten. Global warming is restrained. All we have to do is tie on our bibs," end quote. The problem is, it didn't work. As he writes, quote, "Interviews with almost 60 industry investors and insiders, including many who have been employed by or been part of the leadership teams of these companies, reveal a litany of squandered resources, broken promises, and unproven science. Yet companies rushed to build expensive facilities and pushed scientists to exceed what was possible, creating the illusion of a thrilling race to market," end quote. The odd thing is, he's not sorry. While many alarmists assure us that the Green New World will be richer and more comfortable, others apparently can't wait to transform us from sluggish, selfish, gobbling nitwits into happy people who own nothing and eat it too. Thus, Fassler exults that, quote, "For all its terrifying urgency, climate change is an invitation to reinvent our economies, to rethink consumption, to redraw our relationships to nature and to one another. Cultivated meat was an excuse to shirk that hard, necessary work," end quote. So there, you will be uncomfortable and you will like it. Or at least, he will. We also note that the retreat from logic on climate change continues, with a piece in The Atlantic threatening that, quote, "a climate reckoning is coming for the next president," end quote. What, the White House air conditioning will break down? He'll be arrested by the IPCC? Well, no, not a reckoning in the sense of a reckoning, just Orange Man bad. Quote, "If Donald Trump wins a second term, another Trump presidency all but guarantees a complete abnegation of the country's climate duties from 2025 to 2029, end quote. Following which, the piece insists, an angry populace will demand real action. In their fantasy land. Though not in the real world, where China just keeps building coal plants and the increases in their emissions outweigh anything that we might conceivably do. In the newsletter, we also note that alarmists like to claim extreme weather is getting worse and worse. They don't even bother backing it up with data anymore, but in our new Getting Worse series, we're going to run through the list of extreme weather types and see what the evidence says, starting with tropical cyclones, also known as hurricanes. On a Substack channel, Roger Pilkey Jr. recently showed an updated count of global tropical cyclones making landfall from 1970 to the end of 2023. And when you look at this chart, it seems that the severe ones, that's the red trend line, are getting worse. But here's the catch. If you look at the Western North Pacific and North Atlantic basins, which account for 67% of global hurricane landfalls and which have records going further back than the rest of the world to 1950, you find no red line trend. Just as you find no trend if you count all hurricanes rather than simply landfalling ones. So, the numbers clearly show that hurricanes are not getting worse, unlike the discussion about them. Ah, and from the "we're all not going to die" file, a recent study in Nature magazine by a team of 17 scientists has reconstructed summer and winter temperature histories for West Antarctica. Yep, that's the place that's typically around minus 30 degrees Celsius, so it's in imminent danger of melting away, according to the alarmists. But it seems that if it were going to melt away, it would have done so a long time ago because, quote, "summer temperatures in West Antarctica increased through the early to mid-Holocene, reached a peak 4,100 years ago, and then decreased to the present," end quote. Warming thousands of years ago due to natural causes, then cooling down to the present. It turns out the climate is capable of varying all by itself. And if the poles really are heating faster than the average, someone forgot to tell the South Pole. And speaking of West Antarctica, from the CO2science.org archive, we bring you a study that notes that we're forever hearing about the catastrophic consequences of unprecedented CO2-induced global warming, especially as it applies to the melting of the Antarctic ice sheet and subsequent sea level rise. But, the researchers say, the actual ice isn't cooperating with what the models say. For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, and I'm not afraid of Michael Mann.